Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the show. Today, I'm delighted to welcome to the show Bud Blanich. Bud, am I correct? Am I saying your name correctly?
Absolutely correct.
Blanich, okay.
And thank you for getting it right. So many people don't.
Well, I live in the Deep South, and we have a lot of, you know, different names down here, so I always like to look at it and try to phonetically say it. So Bud is known as the Common Sense Guy, and I love that moniker. Bud is a success coach, he's a motivational speaker, he is an author, prolific author, and a blogger. He helps individuals and teams and entire organizations succeed by applying their common sense. He is the official guide for career development at selfgrowth.com, one of my very favorite websites, and the Success IQ University preferred partner for career development. Bud is a member of the USA Today Small Business Advisory Panel, and is a member of the Creating We Institute, an international group of coaching practitioners who have come together to create new forms of engagement and innovation in the workplace. Bud also writes a monthly column called Common Sense, of course, in PM360, which is a print magazine for pharmaceutical product managers. He also writes a monthly column for .com Secrets magazine, and you can find his popular blog at www.successcommonsense.com. He posts there 5 days a week. Boy, I wish I was that disciplined, let me tell you. Bud is a Harvard educated, and I'm not going to hold that against you, but he has a no, maybe not, but he has a no-nonsense approach to his work that goes back to his roots in the steel country of Western Pennsylvania. His approach to career and life success is a result of over 35 years of business experience, 10 years of research, and study of successful people and the application of common sense. And I love that we're going to be talking about common sense. So, Bud, good morning, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, good morning, Denise, and thank you so much for inviting me. And, you know, don't worry about the Harvard stuff. I can remember one of my bosses many years said to me, well, you don't act like a Harvard guy, and I'm not sure what that meant, but I said, well, thank you.
Yeah,
that's what I said. I said, thank you.
I think some people get so overly educated that they lose their common sense, and we can probably chat about that later.
But mm-hmm.
Look, I have been reading about you. You and I have had a couple of conversations prior to this. You're a fascinating guy.
So, well, thanks. I appreciate that.
You are. So do me a favor and share a little bit about yourself, your history, and you know how you got to where you are today with our listeners, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, as you said in the intro, I grew up in Western Pennsylvania. I literally grew up in a company town. It was called Ambridge because the American Bridge Division of U.S. Steel was headquartered there. And second generation immigrant family, first generation to go to college. And I went off into the world of work after I got out of college, and there was so much emphasis as I was growing up on, you got to go to college, you got to go to college, you can't work in a steel mill like me, son, you got to go to college. And so I went to college, and then it was like, well, now what? And I realized that while I learned a bunch of stuff in school, I really didn't have a real good idea of what it takes to actually succeed in the world of work. I saw people who I thought, you know, weren't quite as good as me or didn't perform as well as me getting ahead of me. And so I started trying to figure out what it takes to actually succeed, you know, and build a successful life and career. And I learned some things along the way And now, as I'm sort of getting into my twilight of my career, I've been spending a lot of time really trying to help other people sort of benefit from the mistakes and the knowledge and the wisdom that I, you know, mistakes I made, the knowledge and the wisdom I gained along the way, so that hopefully their success journey can be a little smoother than mine. So I have recently, in the past, I spent most of my life working with large corporations in a consulting function, and lately I've been doing increasing amounts of coaching work. And increasingly, I've really decided that what I really want to do as my legacy is to help other people, or to provide at least information and advice to other people so that they can create the successful lives and careers that they want and deserve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you mentioned corporate clients, I've looked at some of the list of your, you know, the people you've worked with. You've worked with some household names, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, Pepsi, I mean, AT&T. So
mm-hmm.
You know what you're talking about.
Well, General Motors is on that list, too. We know where they are now. But, I have worked with some very large companies. And that's one of the things that I think is helpful in what I bring to people, is in that I understand what it takes to succeed, actually, inside large organizations. And it's not just being a good performer. There's lots of other things, and hopefully we'll talk about them as we go forward here. So, and I do think that that's one of the benefits that I bring to some of the to anybody who I work with, either as a coach or the people listening to this call or people who read my blogs, is that I sort of have an insider view on what it takes to succeed in a large bureaucratic organization.
Yeah, and boy, we need that these days, don't we? There's a lot of angst in the world, and I think if people were to figure out what it is that they're doing best and what it is that they bring to the community at large, meaning their corporate community or their office or whatever,
mm-hmm.
they may not need to worry so much about losing their job.
No, exactly. And that's one
of
the things.
People are just running around going, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, and they're not really using their common sense and doing what's best for everyone
mm-hmm.
involved, not just themselves.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons I actually put together this little common sense success system that you and I have discussed before.
Mm-hmm.
To me, there are so many people who either have lost their jobs or are looking for new ones, or are very worried about looking their jobs. They keep looking over their shoulder. And one of the things that I've been really trying to do in this past year is help people realize that they don't have to be just a victim when it comes to downsizing, that they can do certain things to position themselves so that they are actually going to be the last person on the list when it comes to doing cuts when companies start looking at shipping jobs overseas or layoffs or all of the kind of things that so many people have experienced in the past 12 to 18 months.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I'm noticing, too, and I wanted to ask you about this because I'm sure the people you're coaching, you're probably seeing some of the same trend. What I'm seeing is that a lot of people who were downsized or, you know, had to leave their job for whatever reason, a lot of them are just going the entrepreneurial route. They're not going to go back and try to go to ladders and write a, you know, $100,000 resume. I mean, they're just saying, you know what? I can do this on my own. I'm good enough to do this on my own. I'm passionate. I'm interested. I have a lot to offer. I'm going to take a chance. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, I am seeing that. And I think that I've had a lot of people tell me that losing their job was the best thing that ever happened to them, in that they were able to get involved with doing something that they truly loved, or in many ways they found different ways to make money and sometimes more money than they ever would have made working inside a corporation. And there's always the trade-off. You know, there's the security versus the ambiguity. And, you know, I worked for about 15 years inside big companies, and for the past 21, I've been working on my own. And, you know, we're coming up here toward the end of the year. I can hardly believe it's going to be Thanksgiving in less of a week. But every year on New Year's Eve, I take a minute for myself and I have a little silent toast and said, well, you made it through another year without a real job. And I'm joking, but I'm proud of that. And I think that a lot of people are finding that it can be a liberating experience to be downsized or to lose your job, because it can then help you move on to something that you really like. There was a TV news guy here in Denver, his name was Ernie Bjorkman, and Ernie, I guess, had been on television here in Denver for like 30 years. And then all of a sudden one day he got a memo saying, well, we're moving in a different direction, and, you know, your last show is going to be, you know, 2 months from now. And he
it was pretty tough, he's
a little gray hair, you know, they're looking for the younger, more edgy people. But Ernie was very cool about it. He talked about it openly on the air, not in a complaining way, and he said, you know, I have always loved animals. And as he was wrapping up his career in TV, he actually took a job as he went to school to become a veterinary assistant. So he went from making quite a bit of money being a television news anchor, and he could afford to do this, to making about $40,000 a year being a veterinary assistant, and he still continues to be on TV sometimes talking about that, and he says he's happier than he's ever been in his life. So in some ways, he never would have had the opportunity to do something that he really likes, which is working with animals. And, you know, and helping them through some of their tough times and some of their sicknesses. And so I think that was just such a great example. And I think that he was very cool because he talked about it openly. He wasn't bitter. He didn't say, oh, these people were throwing me away or anything like that. But he did say, I saw this as an opportunity to do something that I've always liked to do and just never really did. And he went forward. And I think that a lot of people are finding downsizing, layoffs or whatever, as opportunities to find themselves to do truly what they feel that they were meant to do in this world.
That's what I'm seeing. And, you know, I was wondering I've been asking everybody I chat with, are you seeing what I'm seeing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of terrified people in the country right now. But entrepreneurism, depending on what television show or radio show you listen to, they'll tell you, oh, you know, it's dead. It's not. And I'm getting a little bit sick of hearing that, you know, Americans' exceptionalism is in the tank. It's not, and they better stop saying it. I've had just about enough. You know, I'm not taking it
anymore. Well, it's certainly not dead. You can always find ways to make a living if you really do what you love.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that there's, you know, the Internet has created tremendous amounts of opportunity for people to do things like share their knowledge by, you know, blogging or writing books or doing the stuff that you're doing with this terrific
coaching
radio show that you have. But it's also created opportunities for people to do, if we're just willing to learn some small technical things, to learn how to become an affiliate or a super affiliate and basically, you know, sell other people's stuff but do it in a creative way over the Internet.
Right.
It's amazing. And then there's always, you know, different kinds of stores that open up and different kinds of technologies that people develop. I think it's always a good time to be an entrepreneur. And when people ask me about if I have any regrets, and I say the biggest regret I have is that I did it when I was 38 years old instead of 25. I think that it's wonderful to, you know, work for yourself and to try to make something out of, in some ways, nothing. I have a friend who's a banker, and he always says, well, I admire you. You can kind of create money out of thin air. And I don't know if I do that. I think there's an awful lot of sweat and hard work that goes into it. But I understand what he's saying. It's not as if, you know, he's a guy that's kind of like locked into working in these big banking institutions.
Yeah.
And he'd be terrified of having to do something on his own.
Well, and a lot of people aren't. It kind of goes back to what you were saying about New Year's Eve when you say, you know, another year without a real job. Look, you know and I know that's just not the truth at all. Entrepreneurs like you, like me, everybody else that I chat with on this show, we work our fannies off all
mm-hmm.
the time. And we don't sleep. You know, we're so busy. We're just, oh, gosh, and we're so excited. But we love what we do, so we don't know that we're sleep deprived. And we don't know that we're workaholics. I mean, we just don't know these things.
Well, you know, I look in the mirror every once in a while, and I look like Rocky Raccoon, and that's when I say, well, maybe you should get some rest. Those deep-set eyes with the bags underneath. But, you know, you're right. I mean, and I don't mean to even paint a negative picture that way. It's because the great thing about it, if you're an entrepreneur, is that you're choosing to do it, and you're choosing mm-hmm. to do it, you know, for yourself and for the people that you're helping with whatever line of business you choose. And so it's different than working for a large company and spending those long nights like a lot of people in, you know, large companies do too. So there's a different mindset. It always comes back to I chose this and I continue to choose this. It's kind of like, you know, Andre Agassi's book I was reading, and he was talking about, you know, his father made him play tennis from the time he was a little kid, and it wasn't until he was like 27 or 28 years old and had been at the heights and was now at the depths when he said, I chose tennis. Well, I think, you know, entrepreneurs, you, me, and the millions of other people who do it, we choose to do what we do. And so that makes a lot of the other minor inconveniences all worthwhile.
Oh, yeah. I don't even notice them, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
If there are inconveniences, I just kind of steamroller right over the top of them. They don't even impinge on my consciousness at all. Listen, you have developed a common sense success system, and I'm dying to ask you about that.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me what the common sense success system is.
Well, basically, as I was saying before, when it comes to succeeding, and I was writing this primarily for people who work in companies, but I find that a lot of people who are entrepreneurs are telling me it makes sense for them too, that one of the assumptions that I made when I was a young guy was that good performance is enough to get me to where I want to go. And then I started realizing that while I was a good performer, I sometimes wasn't advancing at the pace that I would like. So I started thinking through, well, what does it take? And it took me several years to sort of boil it down into something that was concise. But I came up with, I said, I think that there are four C's to success. And they are clarity, commitment, confidence, and competence. And I believe that all successful people exhibit these four traits in great detail. And so I think you need to have a clear purpose and direction for your life. I think you need to commit to taking personal responsibility for your success. I think you have to be confident. And then I think there are certain competencies that go beyond the technical competencies you bring to your work that you need to develop if you're going to be successful. So that's what the Common Sense Success System is all about. And I try to explain in the material that I offer there to people these things in great detail and give them ideas on how they can apply them in their lives.
So let's talk about clarity. Clarity is important, and I think a lot of people, when they're in a panic mode, which tends to happen when you're starting a new venture, clarity can kind of be the first thing that goes out the window. So how do you bring them back to just a crystal clear idea of what it is that they need to do, where they need to go, how they need to go about doing it? Clarity is important, so can you chat a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and you're absolutely right about that, that people sometimes lose. It's one of the first things that goes. People graduate from college. It's a tough job market, and they end up taking jobs in an industry that they don't like or the type of work that they don't like merely because they're so afraid of being unemployed that they take any job they can get. You see it happening oftentimes with people who were laid off. You see it sometimes with people who are trying to start a business. A lot of times I watch people try to start a business and look at it from the perspective of, well, how can I make the most money the quickest? But, well, I say to them, well, what do you really like to do? Well, that's not important. I really need to make money here. And my logic is that if you really find something that you really like, that you enjoy, where you have the skills, the expertise, knowledge, figure out how you can take that and turn it into your business, as opposed to saying, well, let me buy a Subway franchise, or let me, you know, become an affiliate marketer on the internet or something like that. Because I think that it's really important to figure out what you want out of your life and career, because if you're doing something where you're not happy, it really is work. If you're doing something that you truly enjoy, as we were just talking about before, it's not so much work, and you don't mind the amount of time and effort that you put into it. You know, you hear the words bandied about, you know, and Stephen Covey's very big on, you know, creating your, you know, your mission statement. So I always suggest to people that what you need to do is to have a clarity of purpose and direction. And I equate the word purpose with mission. It's to show off my minimal French, it's your raison d'etre, your reason for being. And, you know, what I've come to, and for me, my reason for being truly is to help other people be successful. And so once you figure that out, what your reason for being is, then you can start to create a vision or a direction in which you move so that you can take that reason and then be able to start to create some goals and some places that you want to move. So I think that the whole idea of creating a clarity of purpose and direction, sort of like a mission and then a vision for what you want to do with your life, is really important. I think another thing that you need to do is to create a vivid mental picture of yourself as a success. And you have to see yourself living a successful life. See yourself, picture yourself in as vivid detail as you possibly can, actually living the kind of successful life that you want. Because, see, this image can guide you when things get tough. It's kind of like this shining beacon out there that when you feel like giving up, you can say, no, this is the image that I've created for myself, and I'm going to reach this image. And I'll tell you a funny story. I was just this week in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I was doing a talk on to National Association of Women Business Owners. And I had one of my books with me, Four Secrets of High-Performing Organizations, and we were offering it to people who were at the meeting. And at one point, when I first had written that book, one of the things that I had done was create this image of myself as sitting at a table with a stack of these books, and there was a line of people, you know, waiting to buy the books and get me to sign them. And that is exactly what happened on Wednesday in North Carolina. I was sitting at a table with a stack of my books, and here was this long line of people, must have been about 50 people, all of whom who wanted the book and all of whom, you know, wanted me to sign it. And so it took a while, but that vivid mental image that I had created actually came true. And I think that that image really helps you when you want to, you know, give up or quit or settle for something less than, you know, you really want to achieve. So to me, it's all about that being clear on what you want, and the more clear you can be, and actually the more vivid you can make it, the easier it is for you to achieve what you set out to do in life.
Now, how do you counsel people who say, you know, I can do that, but, and there's always that but, and they create these self-limiting walls around their own image? Literally, I've seen people say, well, you know, I really want to have a really nice house, and I want to have it over in this area, but I can't afford the golf course. So how about if I live next to it? I just want to smack them. And I know.
Well, you sound more like you're from Pittsburgh than Louisiana. That's what we do. That's what they do in Pittsburgh, is smack them.
See, my approach is the wrong one. That's why I have you on the show. So you could tell people how to do it the correct way, because smacking doesn't work.
Well, sometimes it does, but only as a last resort. You know, when you said that, it kind of reminds me of the old one of the airplane movies where the guy was freaking out and because he thought they were going to crash, and there was this long line of people, you know, waiting to beat him up. Smack them back into reality. When you bring that up, it's interesting because it really kind of ties to the second part, what I talk about, committing to taking personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. Because you're kind of copping out a lot of times when you say, well, I can't afford it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying go up
your credit cards, but I'm also saying don't limit your thinking.
If you really want it, it's, you have to say, okay, I'm going to choose to do whatever it takes to be able to get it. Now, I must admit, when I talk to people about creating a vivid mental image of yourself as a success, and I try to guide them into an image that was more like the one I just described of, you know, sitting at a table signing books, or, and all the images that I've always created for myself have always been with me in somehow doing what I do. You know, early in my career when I wanted to become an organization development professional, I had this really vivid images of me in a working in a conference room with a group of senior executives, you know, facilitating the discussion and making it work. So I have never really sort of had the image of, you know, me in, you know, my BMW, although I, you know, actually have a BMW. Well, actually, it's the one my wife drives. I drive my Jeep. But or never an image of me in my house or me getting fitted for a custom suit or anything like that, because I think that the image that you want to create is of you doing what you do and doing it in a way that you're successful, as opposed to the result of that success, which is the house where you live or the car that you drive or the school where you're sending your kids or whatever. I think that is secondary to the success that comes from thinking about what you actually will be doing with your life that will then enable you to have some of the nice things that go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, and it goes back to you, even if people do want to choose to say, okay, here's the image of me in this house, in this gated community, living on this on the 15th hole or whatever, you still need to create a vivid image, and then you do need to say, you need to fight those self-limiting things that says, I'll never be able to do that. Because
right.
If you say, I'll never be able to do that, guess what? You'll never be
you'll
able
never
to
be
do
able
it.
To do that. That's exactly
and,
right.
And, you know, so you have to start from the premise of believing that you can do it. And, you know, it goes to, like, you know, a lot of this stuff, the law of attraction. You know, you ask for what you want, you believe that you can get it, and then you receive it. Well, so that's like 1, 2, 3. Well, I think there's like 2A, which is ask, believe, and then 2A is really work hard, and then 3 is receive.
Yeah, you don't want to sit around and wait for the, you know, UPS driver to deliver it. You've got to do something. You have to have a plan, an action plan to go get it.
And that starts with clarity.
Right.
And then, you know, and then as you move into commitment, I mean, you have to take, you know, personal responsibility. I mean, you know, I'm the only one that can make me a success, and you're the only one who can make you a success. And, you know, we go about it in different ways, but both of us are really, really, really committed to what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that once you decide that you're going to be successful, it's empowering. You have now put yourself in a power position because you've said, I am saying it's up to me. I can do what I hope to do and want to do and expect to do in this life. And by golly, I am going to do it. And that puts you in a driver's seat. And that makes you a very, very powerful person because you've taken charge of your life, and you've committed to taking personal responsibility. Now, a lot of people are just unwilling to do this, and it's really sad, but you can't get that house in that community and have that money for the country club if, in fact, you don't put yourself in the driver's seat and empower yourself to say, I am going to do this, I will do this, I can do this, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to do this.
So playing the lottery is not a plan?
Well, there's a very interesting book called Hope is Not a Strategy. So playing the lottery is not a plan.
I kind of didn't think it was.
Well, you know, definition of a lottery, it's a tax on people who are bad at math.
I think it's just a way for silly people to give up their money, but, you know.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, and, you know, my parents would play, you know, actually with the bookies, and it was you bet a nickel, and your chances of winning, because, you know, it was a three-digit number, were 1 in 100, and if you won, you got $30. So in other words, even if you won, you only got, you know, your chances were 1 in 100, but you only got rewarded with 60%. And that's the way all lotteries work, and they're just not a particularly good strategy to try to get what you want out of life.
I wouldn't think so. So, I mean, we've gone through clarity. We're talking about commitment. Somebody in the chat room just said, boy, I like that idea, you know, visualizing, seeing yourself doing it rather than having it. And frankly, I think that's a very strong, strong difference.
To me, there's it's sort of like, you know, cause and effect. It's seeing yourself living in a great house. I mean, I think that's fine. And you know, we can all have daydreams about that. But I really do believe that success is doing something that you love and is beneficial to other people. And the more you can visualize yourself that way, I think the more likely you are to be successful, and then as a byproduct, you have the house. So thank you to the person, you know, who said that. And then the other thing about commitment, I think, you know, it comes, you know, goals are important too. You have to have goals. You have to set, you know, high goals, because if you don't set goals, you never, it almost is kind of like a lottery. It's almost like the visualization of what you want out of life is more, like daydreaming than it is, you know, being able to help you truly succeed. So when you start setting goals, you start setting stepping stones along the way that are going to move you to where you want to be. So, for example, if I just use myself, I knew that I did have to get further education. Maybe I took it a little further because I got a had a master's degree from Penn State, and then I actually did go on to Harvard to do my doctoral work. But I knew that I had to have more education than just a bachelor degree if I wanted to become a consultant, at least at a young age, because education there substituted a little bit for experience. And so I set goals, educational goals for myself so that I could move forward in my life. I can remember when I was back in the 70s, I was living here in Colorado for the first time. And I was, you know, working at a job and going to school Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for two nights from about 5:30 to about 10:30 at night because I wanted to accelerate my progress. So I set a goal for myself in those days of completing it was a 2 years program if you did it full time, 4 years if you did it, you know, in the evenings. But I set a goal for myself of doing it in 2 years while I was working full time. And I accomplished it. And that's how you start to make those visions of yourself come true, is by setting goals and then doing whatever it takes, short of being unethical or illegal, to accomplish it. If it does mean, you know, giving up a few happy hours because you have to go to school, well, so be it. Because in the long run, it's going to pay off, and it's going to move you toward your vision of a successful life and career. So I'm a big believer in goals, and I really do believe that goals are so important to committing to your success, because when you set these goals and you work hard to achieve them, you're demonstrating not only to yourself but to other people around you that you are willing to do what it takes so that you can be successful as you move forward in your life and career.
Right.
And there's one last point that I always try to make, is that you have to choose to react positively to the people and the events in your life. You go through life and stuff happens. I mean, stuff happens. There's going to be good stuff, bad stuff, frustrating stuff, happy stuff. And the important thing is not what happens. The important thing is how you react to it. You know, I think one of the comedians many years ago used to always say, well, the devil made me do it. Well, you know, the devil doesn't make you do anything.
What was his name? Red somebody. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like...
Red Fox,
yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and he was hilarious. But here's a perfect example. I'm a big tennis fan, and I'm also a big Serena Williams fan. And this year she got all the way to the semifinals of the U.S. Open. And
melted completely down.
She was in a tough situation.
Yeah.
And it was, and Lyons person made a bad call. I mean, when you saw it on TV, it was clearly an incorrect call. And it was really funny because she got the ball, she bounced it a few times, she walked back up, she was going to serve, and I said, good for you, Serena, you're not going to let this bother you. And then she just lost it. She went over, started screaming, she was profane and everything else, and a long story short, she lost that match because she was assessed a point, and that point ended up being the match that made her, was the one that gave the opponent the match. And a lot of people would say, well, she was so angry she couldn't help herself. And the point is, we can always choose how we react. And the irony in this one was it really looked as if she almost made a conscious choice that it was more important to her to blow up and make the point about the call than it was to continue with the match. We'll never know. But the point that I like to make using that, and it's just like, you know, Kanye West with Taylor Swift at the Grammy Awards. And it's just like Joe Wilson, you know, screaming out when the president was making his speech. You lie. We all can choose how we react to anything. And that's the important thing that we all need to do. And it goes back to what I was saying about empowering. When somebody does something that negatively impacts me, I can choose to fight with them. I can choose to ignore it. I can choose to say, well, what did I learn about dealing with that person that I can use the next time I'm dealing with him or her? And I think that how you react to what happens to you in life demonstrates your commitment to taking personal responsibility for success, and in many ways has a real lot to do with how successful you'll be. And if you can choose to react positively to the negative stuff that happens, if you can choose to treat any of the negative things that happen to you in your life or the failures that you encounter or the setbacks that crop up as you're trying to move forward as learning experiences and say, I'm going to learn from this, I'm going to move forward, and I'm going to be better and stronger for it, I can almost guarantee you that you're going to be successful. If you choose to be the victim and say, this happened, poor me, or this happened, or that happened, and it was this person's fault, you're never going to be successful because you're not going to be truly committed to taking the personal responsibility for your own success.
No, I agree, and I think that's extremely profound. People, I don't know any failures. I know people like you, like me, like people in the chat room, people who listen to this, and we hit obstacles. But we, you know, we either go around them, we, you know, dig under them, or in my case, blow them up and go around them. But, you know,
well, yeah, it was Edison said,
really,
you know.
It depends on what you do with it, but you can't just stop and go, oh, poor, poor, pitiful me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's,
I mean,
that's,
you know,
the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, it was Edison said, you know, I know like 1,000 ways how not to make a light bulb and one way to make one.
I actually heard that this morning when I was listening to Tony Robbins at the gym. He was talking about that, and I thought,
oh, you said that?
Yeah. As many times as I hear that, it still just makes me go, uh-huh, you're right. It just, it doesn't matter how many times you hear it. It is just absolutely the truth.
Yeah, it's, a failure, a setback, is only a failure if you don't learn anything from it.
And if it stops you cold.
And if it stops you, if it makes you give up. Yeah. It's, you know, I mean, I look all over the place for information that I can use to try to help people. And I was reading a thing of all things, a Buddhist website, and there was a quote there from the Dalai Lama. And one of the things that he was equating laziness with lack of self-confidence. But I forget exactly the quote and how he said it, but he basically was saying, when you say, and it kind of goes back to what you were saying about the person who was talking about the house and the golf course, you know, I'd like this, but I don't think I can do it. Well, the Dalai Lama says that's laziness, because you're letting yourself off the hook, because when you say, I don't think I can do this, well, then it's easy for you to say, well, I won't do it. And all that is, in his way of thinking, and I agree with him, and that's just being lazy. So, you know, so you run into a problem and say, well, told you I couldn't do it, or, you know, at least I tried. And, you know, I'm a big believer in trying, but I'm a bigger believer in keep on trying till you get it right or you figure out what you can do. So just the idea of trying and saying, well, couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting, particularly coming from the Dalai Lama, you know, that he says, you're just being lazy. And, you know, I love it because I think that's some real tough love and really good stuff.
Well, it's the truth. And you know, in my household, it's just me and my husband, but there are a couple of words that we just don't use, and one is can't. Now, I might say I won't do something, but I never say I can't do something. And the other one is if. It's always when. It's not if. It's when.
Mm-hmm.
If I make up my mind to do it, it's going to happen. Like you, it could be several years down the road when you're signing that book, but it's going to happen.
Yep, and I really believe, I mean, can't is, and the sad thing about can't is most often it is won't.
Yeah.
When people use the word can't, they really are saying, well, I won't.
Or
I'm not willing to put in the time and effort or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm not a Pollyanna. I don't believe that, you know, much as I would have liked to have been an NFL player, I don't think I was gifted athletically enough to do it. But, you know, at least I tried, you know, all at least through, you know, high school playing football.
Mm-hmm.
I got the cold dose of water from Joe Paterno in 1968. He said, we'd love to have you in our program here at Penn State, but you ain't good enough.
Oh.
And so I said, well, thanks, Joe. it was actually very helpful to me in many ways.
Oh, well, you know, and that didn't stop you, though. So that's where this whole success thing comes. You took it and you went, ow, that didn't like that, but you did something different with your life. It didn't have you sitting in a corner wearing your old jersey, rocking back and forth and keening like a baby.
Yep. Or worse yet, it didn't have me out coaching peewee football and abusing little kids because I'm a frustrated football player, which I've seen a lot of that, and that's terrible.
I would imagine. We have a couple of things in the chat room. I started laughing a minute ago when you were talking. It was involuntarily because when I mentioned, you know, I was listening to Tony Robbins at the gym, some smart aleck, and she's a friend of mine, so I can call her that, said, Tony, was at your gym? Smart aleck.
Well, I mean, you know, he goes to the gym all the time. I mean, that was the thing with him. Think about it. He was very overweight, and he kind of said, he visualized himself as being thin and in shape, and he made it happen.
Right. And he was saying in my ear this morning, he was saying that he had to equate pain, you know, he had to learn the difference between pain and pleasure, and equating the pain of eating that food, everything on the plate, with the pleasure of being able to push it away with food on it. And I'm paraphrasing,
mm-hmm.
but he was able to, you know, get back in shape by doing things like that. Another comment, and I'm going back because there's several comments in here.
Mm-hmm.
The Journaling Genius says, I just looked at one of my vision boards. I have a drawing of myself. We're going back to your book signing.
Mm-hmm.
I have a drawing of myself at a book signing, but I think I forgot to put in the line of people.
Well, put in the line of people because you don't want to be sitting there by yourself at the table.
Yes, it's a little important. And the next question is, can he comment on affirmations? A lot of people.
Well, I'm a huge believer in affirmations.
Okay.
I really believe they work. I think they come with the visualization piece. And I'll tell you a very funny story about affirmations, about me, how far I've taken it. I decided that when I was doing more in terms of when my work started moving more towards with individuals and sort of into what I would call, I guess, the self-help realm as opposed to corporate consulting, I decided I wanted to be a star in the self-help realm. And so that's one of my affirmations. I said, Bud Belanich is a self-help star. Bud Belanich is a star. And I repeat that a lot. And so what I did, and anybody can do this, but I don't know anybody else who has done it, is I went to, you probably start getting emails this time of year from the Name a Star Foundation, you know, give your mm-hmm. friend or your loved one, name a star for them, you know, for the holidays.
Right.
You ever hear this thing? I think it's called Name
a Star.
Star
every year. Star
you do? You name a star?
I
well, I named a star Bud Belanich.
No.
So that was my gift to me, and it was my affirmation. So when I say Bud Belanich is a star, I really believe it. Because Bud Belanich is literally a star,
right.
And I have all the coordinates and everything, and the little certificate that goes with it. And so, I mean, and anybody could do that. And if that's one of your affirmations, that you see yourself as a star in whatever your line of work is or your field of endeavor, you can do that. And I have no affiliate relationship with these people or anything like that. But I really decided I was going to do that one day. And it's really funny because a lot of times, again, with affirmation, sometimes people say, well, you know, I can say it, but I really don't believe it. You know, like I'm powerful, I'm fit, I'm successful, whatever, but I sort of really don't believe it. But when I say Bud Belanich is a star, I believe it because it's literally true because I spent the $20 or whatever it was to name a star Bud Belanich. And so I really believe that affirmations are powerful. I think they are another way of visualizing yourself as a success, and that when you visualize yourself as a success, you're well on the way to doing it. When you repeat things to yourself that are positive, and you know, you use that positive self-talk that affirmations are, I believe that helps you create goals, because once you start using affirmations, at least the way my head works and my mind works, it says, well, Bud, well, what do you need to do to be able to get to that place if, in fact, you're saying that that's what it is? And again, I'm a big believer in them. I'm a big believer in stating them in the present as opposed to, you know, I will be a star or something like that.
Right.
But I think affirmations are absolutely powerful. And I think that, they alone aren't going to get you necessarily what you want, because an affirmation is only a wish if you're not willing to commit to taking the personal responsibility for making it happen. But they certainly provide a great foundation and a great clarity of purpose and direction for you, because when you are affirmative in what you want out of life and you treat it as an affirmative, positive, present statement, you are setting yourself on the path to taking personal responsibility, setting goals, and doing the work that you need to do to be successful.
I agree. And anybody who doesn't really believe in affirmations or saying positive things to yourself, try this little test. Go into the bathroom, look in the mirror, and say, you know, I just look terrible today. I have a headache. I just don't feel so good. And you know what's going to happen?
You're going to feel that way.
About half an hour later, you're going to have a headache. Your eyes are going to be puffy. And you're just going to look terrible.
Yeah.
In the moment. We have to live in the moment. We have to tell ourselves that good. We have to tell ourselves good things. If we're telling ourselves negative things, we believe that. That negative self-chatter is terribly damaging.
And
the opposite is also true.
The problem with negative self-talk is it's kind of programmed into us at an early age. You know, my mother, you know, who loved me dearly, and if anything, was probably like overprotective of me, but if she thought I was bragging about something that I accomplished, and I think it's important to, you know, tell other people when you're feeling good about something that you did. And, you know, she used to say to me, well, self-praise stinks. You know, what a message to give a kid when, you know, they're like 7, 8, 9, 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And she in no way was trying to belittle me or demean me, but she was, you know, that was her generation, you don't toot your own horn.
Right,
and
you don't want to be a braggart. I remember that.
Yeah, and you get elementary and secondary education in this country, but an opportunity for people to tell you how bad you are or how you're not going to succeed. I remember we had this in my high school. We had this legendary English teacher. She retired, I guess, the year I was a senior. So she was old. She was in her 60s. At that point, and her name was Miss Myrtle Tremblay. And so we were all in this, and my high school was not necessarily known for preparing people to go on to college. Mostly they saw their mission as preparing people to work in a steel mill. But, you know, they had, you know, the one group of, you know, like 30 or 40 of us out of about 400 who were, in like the advanced English class, you know, for college. And I can remember the whole first half of the year, she basically spent telling us, you're not going to get accepted to college, you're not getting into the college that you want. And then after most of us were accepted to college, she spent the second half of the year, our senior year, telling us that we weren't going to do any good now we were there.
Oh,
this is not a good way to send kids off to college.
No. And nobody ever listened to her to see what she was doing to these students?
Well, actually, she was considered to be a legendary teacher. She had actually, it wasn't a published book, but she had written her own book on, like, you know, grammar and stuff like that, that she ran off on a mimeograph, and everybody knew if you were in Miss Tremblay's class, because, you know, she had bound them, you know, in these sort of binders that she gave people. And I don't, you know, at least at that point, I don't think that anybody even thought that that was inappropriate. It was sort of, you know, it was carrot and stick motivation, and her motivation was clearly the stick. It was basically, I mean, that's the thing about negative self-talk. Most of the people that have kind of programmed us with some negative to end up having negative self-talk about us really thought they were doing it for our own good.
I'm going to
really make you know that you better really work hard, you better pay attention to what I'm saying, or you're not going to succeed, and that by and large, you know, you're probably not programmed to succeed, and so you have to work really hard at it. And
yeah,
I think that was her motivation, and I'll tell you, when I went to college, I honestly thought, well, I don't know, I mean, because there were a lot of guys that I knew who went to school, you know, who were a couple years older than me, who ended up back home working in the steel mill, you know, after a year away, and I kind of, I can remember thinking, well, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be any good at this, and I was fortunate. I got to college, and, you know, I ended up making a dean's list my first semester, and that's what took for me to develop the confidence that I had that, yeah, I can do this. I can do this. I'm smart enough. I can do this. And when I look around, none of these people here are any smarter than me. But it certainly didn't come. I certainly didn't go with a great deal of confidence in my ability to succeeding in the world of higher education.
So confidence is very, very important in this, you know, common sense success system. Confidence is something that you must cultivate.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and I have like three things that I tell people all the time. First, you have to choose optimism. And optimism and being optimistic is a choice, just like being pessimistic is a choice. And, you know, the old saying, if you're an optimist, you're right. If you're a pessimist, you're right. But, I mean, I really do believe that if you want to be a self-confident person, and I really do believe that confidence is absolutely important to creating a successful life and career, you just have to believe in your heart of hearts that today is going to be better than yesterday, that tomorrow is going to be better than today. And you have to be an optimist. When I was in high school, I participated in the Optimist International Oratory Contest. And the title that year was Optimism, Youth's Greatest Asset. And if you remember that movie with Joe Pesci in it, my cousin Denny, youth is not an easy word to say, let alone write a 10-minute speech on. But I did okay. I won my section, and I actually finished third in the state. But and I got a copy of the Optimist Creed, and I have it hanging, in my office. And I've actually created a PDF of that that I give to people if they want it. So if people send me an email, and we can talk about that later, I'd be happy to send them like a frameable copy of the Optimist Creed. I think it's great.
How do people reach you?
Well, they could just send me an email at bud@budbilanich.com. bud@budbilanich.com. Mm-hmm. And just put Optimist Creed in the subject line, and I'll send it to you. And then the second thing about optimism, about confidence, is you have to face your fears and act. And it goes back a little bit to what we were talking about with commitment and what the Dalai Lama was saying. You just, you know, can't let your fears paralyze you. I mean, when I find myself procrastinating, when I become aware of the fact that I'm procrastinating. Sometimes I procrastinate without realizing I'm procrastinating. But when I become aware of the fact that I'm procrastinating, I mean, you know, it's easy. You start surfing, you start looking for something on the web, and then you get caught up surfing the web.
Yeah,
but when I find myself,
emails.
There you go. When I find myself procrastinating, I say to myself, what scares you here? What are you afraid of? Because I really believe that procrastination is the manifestation of fear. And usually for me, it's fear of, well, what I'm going to do isn't going to be good enough, or it's going to be rejected, or somehow I'm going to fail at what I'm trying to do. Once I identify what I'm afraid of, then I can kind of say, I can kind of admit it and accept it, sort of embrace it. Yeah, well, this kind of scares me a little bit. This is a little different thing than I might have ever done before, or I don't know if what I'm planning is really going to be as good as, you know, it could be. Once I sort of embrace the fact that I'm nervous about this, a little fearful about it, then I can act, and that fear actually acts as a motivator to me, because I can say, yeah, it probably won't be really good, or you might fail at it if you don't put all of your time and energy into it. So what you need to do is get going on it and work hard and make sure that, you know, you don't let those fears come true by the fact of the effort and the quality of effort that you put into what you're doing. So, again, I find that procrastination really is, for me, and I think for a lot of people, it's a manifestation of something that you fear. And then when you find yourself procrastinating, figure out what scares you, embrace that fear, and do whatever it takes to be able to move past that fear and be successful. Use it as a motivator as opposed to something that's debilitating and stops you. And then the last part
is filling out your IRS forms. I mean, how many people wait till the 14th?
There you go.
That's a motivator.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of fear in there.
There it is. And then I think the last people about confidence is, just one last point, is you have to surround yourself with positive people. So, like, I think it's great.
Yeah.
You're an incredibly positive person. People who are listening, who are participating in the chat room, they're surrounding themselves with a positive person, you know, like you, because that's important for success. That's important for confidence, is that the more positive people you have in your life, the more successful and confident you're likely to be.
Well, confidence is very attractive to other people, and it empowers other people.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them the confidence to say, well, you know, I'm watching her or him do everything that I know I can do. It can be done. I can go do it.
Exactly. Exactly.
The only thing that stops people is really their own mind, in my way of thinking. So the fourth one that I wanted to ask you about, and we're getting low on time, I'm going to actually open up the line in just a minute and see if anybody has any questions. But the last part of the four C's is competence, and that one is huge to my way of thinking.
Yeah, that's a whole other probably conversation, but I think
we're going to have another show, to be honest with you.
But I think there's four things. I tell people you have to be able to create positive personal impact, and meaning you have to be able to present yourself to the world in a way that's attractive to others. And you're absolutely right. When you're confident, you're attractive to others. But, I believe you need to have, you know, a strong personal brand, and we can talk about that for a long time. I believe you have to pay attention to how you present your, you know, how you dress. How you dress is important. And I think you and I have had conversations about this, that even though, you know, you get dressed even on days where you're not going to see anybody. And then you also need to pay attention to your online image. And this is really important for younger people, because sometimes they don't understand a lot of stuff that's on the Internet everybody sees. And you just need to be somebody who understands manners and etiquette. I have a good friend, her name is Sharon Hill, and she writes about etiquette. And she always talks, she says, you know, etiquette's really about rules and a set of protocol, things you can learn. Manners are things that come from the heart, so that if you have to choose between being mannerly and displaying proper etiquette, be mannerly, because that shows that you're a good person. You want me to go over these other ones quickly, or are we running out of time?
We're actually running out of time, and what I'm going to do is ask you if you can come back.
I'd be happy to. I like you.
I have, thank you. I have a ton of questions, and you're covering so much of what I truly believe, and this is my business model. I mean, what you're talking about here is what I try to impart to people that I coach with and mentor with, and everything that you're talking about is so very important, and I think we need to go a little bit more in depth to the competence part of it. And
mm-hmm.
the reason I say that, and I'm probably going to get on the phone with you later today, and the radio's interrupting me, beg for your help, because what is happening in my industry, well, I have two industries, one is a web developer and the other one is a virtual assistant. And what is happening, Bud, is that people are leaving office jobs and they're saying, I'm a virtual assistant. No, they're not. They don't have a clue. And then they get frustrated and they might pick up one client and that goes badly every single time. And
mm-hmm.
They're not, they may be highly competent in a, in an organized office type of environment, but
mm-hmm.
the internet is an entire different animal altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And there are protocols and there are competencies and there are skills, hard and soft.
Mm-hmm.
That they simply don't know that they need to know. You know, they think, well, I'm good in Excel, you know, I'm good with, you know, Microsoft Office. You know, I'm ready to be a VA. Oh, my gosh. And I am doing my level best to train people and make them understand that they've got to get training. You can't just hang out a shingle on Facebook and say, well, here I am, hire me. Oh, my gosh. And, you know,
well,
that
yeah.
mindset is really difficult for me to overcome, and I'm hoping that you can kind of help me through some of that. So
well,
I'm going to be calling on your expertise. I can
well, I'd
right
be
now.
Happy to help you with that. I mean, but I agree. I mean, it's A, you have to have, it goes back to where we started on that being an outstanding, being a good performer or having certain technical skills just isn't enough. And, yeah, you could be good with Excel or PowerPoint and, you know, make stuff fly around on slides, which I don't know how to do. But even no matter how good you are at that, it comes to your ability to market yourself. It comes to your ability to be organized. It comes to your ability to be able to give advice to people in a way that they are willing to listen to it. It comes to your ability to be a business person as opposed to an Excel expert or a PowerPoint expert.
Exactly, and that's such a critical distinction. I mean, even in the web development industry, you can be a top-notch web developer and not have a clue how to market that website, make it go viral, install widgets, gadgets, plugins. I mean, you can be the best graphic artist and HTML writer out there, but unless that website does something for your client, you just wasted a whole bunch of your time and their money.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's
really
that's a really important lesson, I mean, particularly on web development, because people get so interested in the making it, not that websites should be ugly, but people get too interested in the aesthetics of web development. And,
right.
you know, just somebody sent me an email the other day and said, you know, I'd redone my website and forgot to put a little button up, you know, contact me to make it easy for people to do it. And he searched all over the place to be able to figure out how to get in touch with me. Now, this happened to be somebody that I knew, and he wanted to talk to me about this, and so he took the time to do it. The average person, if
right.
you know, so but you know, so now we have the contact
off.
Button up there, but we had just both forgotten about it when we changed the website design.
Mm-hmm. It's very important, and in this day of online entrepreneurism, you've got to be on top of all of that. And that's the biggest problem that I'm seeing with my particular industry. It's a new emerging technology. A lot of people are, you know, saying, well, I can do this. You know, I don't have a job anymore, and God bless them for wanting to try it. I support them every inch of the way. But don't hang out your shingles, start, you know, telling people I'm going to charge you $35 an hour to answer your emails. No.
Oh, exactly.
No, no, no. And I get so frustrated because, you know, I really want these people to do well. But I also don't want them to just hit that hard wall, have a client that just blows up in their face and then lose interest, because you just don't have to stop there. But you do need to get competent.
Yeah, well, see, I talk a lot about part of competence for me is lifelong learning. And
mm-hmm.
so lifelong learning means you need to learn different things as you go along. I think I know a lot about what it takes to succeed in your life and career. when I started doing a lot of stuff, I didn't have any idea. I'd always worked in a business-to-business model. I sold my services to large companies. Now I'm sort of moving into sort of a business-to-consumer model, and I didn't know anything about that. I had to really, you know, learn about how do you set up a website that sells, how do you set up sales pages, squeeze pages, how do you get your ideas out to people. And so it's what's been cool about this for me is that I am in a rapid learning phase here on that kind of stuff, and that's really fun because I always get excited when I'm learning and feeling as if I'm, you know, moving forward and developing it. And, you know, the interesting thing about this is, you know, I'm a 59-year-old guy, and all these people who are teaching me are like 23 and 24-year-olds. And I think that's great because, you know, these are the people who understand this stuff. It's, you know, that's why I've always been happy to go to doctors just out of med school, because I figure they're up on the cutting edge technology as opposed to the people my age who've been, you know, doing the same thing for too long.
Oh, God, I agree. My haircut, same thing. I go to the Aveda Institute. Those are students. They can mess up my hair, you know, because they know what they're doing. They've got somebody standing over their elbow that says, okay, do this, do that. And it's always perfect because they are learning brand new techniques all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with you. Listen, I am going to invite you back for another episode because we still have so much territory to cover. And I think we have a couple of people on the line that maybe have some questions. And Bud, how do people reach you if they want to look at your success system? Where do they go?
Well, two things. You can learn a lot about me on my website, which is also a blog, and that's just budbilanich.com, www.budbilanich.com. And then I actually have a free CD, a DVD. It's about 90 minutes of about the kind of stuff that we've been talking about here. That's commonsensesuccesssystem.com/free DVD offer.
Okay, I'm going to go get that. Okay, do we have anybody on the line right now? Do you have a question for Bud? Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Yep.
Hi, it's Judy, the journaling genius. How are you?
Hi, Judy. I love geniuses.
And I spell genius with a J for Judy.
Cool. It takes an uncreative person to only figure out one way to spell a word.
Oh, there you go. What's it? Mark Twain said if anybody can only spell it one way, he doesn't have enough imagination. So.
And he's one of my favorites, actually, Mark Twain. I use a lot of his quotes in a lot of my blog posts.
Oh, yeah, he's great. Well, I loved what you were saying. I was the one that asked the question about affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. The biggest thing I find with the whole law of attraction thing, which I think was brilliant, I know Lisa Nichols, I've met Bob Proctor and Jack Canfield and some of the others, but people get stuck in that. A lot of people come up to me. I had a lady just the other day. I was at a networking event. She comes, so I'm doing these affirmations. You know, somebody told me I need to do these affirmations. I'm like, okay, well, what action are you taking? And they're like, So I think that's where the message gets lost.
Yeah, and you know, there's a guy by the name of Paul J. Meyer, and he actually has a company. I think it's called Success Motivation Institute, but you can Google him. It's Paul J. and I believe it's M E Y E R. And I have this thing hanging in my office, and it's kind of like the law of attraction, but it's kind of like on steroids. His big quote is, whatever you can vividly imagine, ardently desire, sincerely believe, and enthusiastically act on must inevitably come to pass. So it's all the law of attraction stuff in terms of vividly imagine, ardently desire, sincerely believe, but it has that one thing in there, enthusiastically act on must come to pass. And to me, that's the difference between, you know, the law of attraction and what I really think it takes to be successful. I mean, I love the idea of ask, believe, and receive, because particularly if you don't believe, you're never going to succeed. But I think there is that piece in there about the hard work and in my more cynical moments, I think that one of the reasons that the law of attraction and The Secret was so popular was people saw it as sort of a shortcut, a quick and easy way to get things done without actually putting in the time and effort that you need to do it.
Right.
It's a good
start,
but you do have to get up, get out of bed every day and go to your office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you
sure do.
Not just check your PayPal account. You have to go actually do things to earn that money.
Denise's, I love your comment, Denise. You can't wait to expect the UPS guy to deliver it.
No.
No, no.
You
even FedEx won't do it.
Yeah, or FedEx.
Yeah. Here it's
excellent.
Both. You know, I do all my shopping online.
Well, and then the other thing is, you know, obviously, I'm going to say I'm tired of hearing about the economy, but a lot of my clients are pretty beat down. Like, I think, like Denise, you were saying, there's a lot of angst out there. And, you know,
it's low-level dread is high.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody, even me, if I'm stupid enough to watch the news, and I'm not that stupid that often, but if I am, I experience instantly, my stomach starts hurting. So I shut it off. I just close it down.
Right.
Well, the news is... You know, it's unbelievable. I mean, the stuff this week about the breast cancer screening, I was just, you know, kind of outraged when I saw that. Because, you know, I've known people who've had breast cancer, and most of them fall into that, you know, 5%, you know, people who, but anyway, I don't want to get off on that. But you're right, the news can be depressing. And, I think that, one of the things that I try to do is to, it goes back to me with this idea of optimism. It's like, you know, if you lose your job, think of it as a door in some way closing, and that many others can open. But if you take the time, you know, and work through it, and so I have found that I have probably been a little bit more sometimes of a therapist with some of my coaching clients lately than I've ever been because of the situation, and I find. What works for me is to really listen to people and let them vent, and then kind of say, okay, one of the points I always make is stuff happens. It's what you do is important. You know, we've talked about all the bad stuff that's happened. Now let's talk about what we can do to move forward. But I think I found that I have to listen to what people have to say before I can, bring that up and say, how can we move forward? Because people do need to feel as if, they've been heard. And when they're hurting or when they're struggling or when they're depressed or when they're feeling frustrated, sometimes just somebody listening and understanding can be real helpful. Now, if I have a coaching client that every time I speak with him or her, that's all they want to talk about, generally that relationship comes to an end. But I think it's important to listen to people, to let them know you understand, and then to then say, okay, well, let's just talk about what we might be able to do to move forward here.
Right.
I have a question for both of you because you guys do a lot of coaching, and I do some. I do more mentoring, I think, than coaching, which I know are two different things. Are you finding that people are just, they're kind of coming to you and their angst is general, or is it real specific? I'm finding that it's general. People are just kind of taking on the world at large and carrying it around on their shoulders, like, oh, God, people are losing their jobs. Oh, my cousin lost her job. Does that directly affect you? And that's always one of my questions after I've listened to them. Well, did this directly impact you today? And pretty much across the board, the answer after they think about it is, well, no. Are you finding that, or is it just in my particular industry?
Go ahead, bud. It's your show.
I was waiting for you, Julie.
He's obviously a gentleman. He was being courteous.
Right. And see,
that's one of the things that I tell people is always be a lady or gentleman. It's not all that hard to do it. I think that I would say it's a little bit of both. I mean, because I've found some people who that I've been working with who have lost a job or are really seeing signs that it's likely that they're going to. So it's been very specific with them. And then there are other people that are these are in some ways depressing times. It seems that even the only time that the stock market rallies is when companies announce big job cuts. So there are, everybody has known somebody or a group of somebodies who have been affected by just the way things are going these days. So, Denise, to answer your question, I find it's a little bit of both. And I also think, though, that your point is absolutely right. It's if we spend so much time thinking about what could happen, we will never actually create what we can, you know, make happen. And, you know, it's the whole idea of catastrophic expectations. I mean, I don't know why, but sometimes we seem to be programmed to sort of think in the terms of, like, what's the worst thing that can happen and then believe that it's going to happen. And oftentimes when you act, when you believe that, you start acting that way. You know, if you believe you're going to lose your job, you start acting in a way that is not positive, and then you end up losing your job.
Well, of course you did. You invited that.
Exactly.
And I guess that was my question. Is that I have to kind of drill down and say, well, did this impact you directly today?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the other thing I do,
that
I even
mindset away.
Yeah, I even did this in a class. I teach classes at InVision, which is a local women's shelter. So these women, they have a lot to be fearful for. You know, I mean, they're in pretty dire situations. But what I said to them is, with fear, is like you have to get into the moment. Is my life, my physical life, actually in danger at this moment? Instead of projecting into the future what could happen, to bring yourself back to the present, and then saying, okay, no, then really there's, and technically there's nothing to be afraid of in that sense, and then look at what can I do to alleviate what I'm thinking could happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And these women have some amazing stories. It's just, you know, just breaks your heart sometimes. And the other thing I do is I take stories from there and obviously anonymously share them with some of my other clients.
Mm-hmm.
Say, look, look what you have to be grateful for, because you don't have this going on in your life. You know, they,
you know,
these women are really rock bottom, some of them.
My wife volunteers at the local Dress for Success place, and, you know, many of the people that get help there are people who, you know, are abused, and one of the reasons they don't have the clothing for jobs is that they have to, you know, flee the situation and leaving pretty much stuff behind. And again, it's the same thing. And you talk about heartbreaking stories. She was working with this one woman, and you know, the people, you know, they get dressed in these clothes that they have that they'll have for the interviews and for job. And she came out of the dressing room, and my wife said to her, "You look so pretty." And this woman, here's a woman like in her mid-30s, she absolutely just broke down.
Uh-oh.
And she said, nobody ever said that to me before.
Oh.
Now, how sad is that,
yes,
to have nobody ever give you any kind of positive feedback, you know, like that? I mean, you know, everybody should feel pretty or handsome, you know, whatever word you want to put on it. And we should tell people, you know, that they look pretty and handsome.
Yeah, and for me that puts things into perspective for a lot of my clients, because they're like, oh, well, yeah, okay, maybe I'm not making a six-figure income, you know, but I have my home and I have my family and I have my health, and then to focus on those positives and then look at what they can do to create that income that they're looking for.
Yep,
right,
you focus on the positive.
Take an inventory and then take action.
Yeah, I was I did a blog post and I'd heard an old song. It was accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative. It's like a song from the 50s. I think it was in a Broadway musical show, and I started doing a post on that. It's exactly what you're saying, Julie. You know, what's good about my situation, and you know, at the very worst, I'm alive today. You know, I'm standing up. You know, the
okay.
sun came up.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, at the very worst. You know, and there's probably a lot of other things that are good,
yeah.
As opposed to you know, what's bad. And it goes back to that mindset. It's all about affirmations. It's all about when you focus on what's bad, that's what tends to manifest itself in your life.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, this is cool. I'd love to chat with you some more.
Well, we're going to have him back, because this has been just a tremendously, I think, helpful conversation for everybody who is listening now or was listening. It's not streaming any longer. And who will be downloading this. I mean, and we still got some more to go. We still need to talk about competence, which is, to me, just that's so important, especially with what I'm seeing now in my emerging technology. So competence is just such an important topic. And Bud, I'm going to, you know, look at my calendar and see if we can work out another date for you to come back soon.
Yeah, we'll find some time.
Okay.
This was great for me. I enjoyed it, and you know, you're such a great interviewer and make it easy to answer questions. So it was a delightful, you know, hour and 20 minutes for me.
Well, thank you very much. And I appreciate your patience staying over because I know you have a very busy schedule.
Well, I just got back. I'm at home, so I'm very calm and chilled out. I'm sitting in my my chair where I do interviews and things like this. It's a nice big Mission furniture chair. Yeah, it's a man chair, but it's nice. My wife got it for me. It's like a Mission style with nice leather cushions and big wooden arms so I can take notes as I'm listening.
God.
And I'm just comfortable. I could sit here and talk for a long time.
Hey, we were talking about affirmations, and you know, Judy and I do a lot of this. She's the journaling genius, and I've learned a lot about journaling from her, and you know, lessons that I take from her, I also share with my clients and with you know people who I coach or mentor. And one of the things that I've learned from Judy is that when you take, I'll wake up at 3:30 in the morning, and I'm known for this. You know, I may be at work at 3:30 in the morning. In fact, I woke up this morning at 1:30. And I told my husband, he happened to wake up at the same time. I said, we need to turn the spotlights off on the tree. They're on. Every morning at 1:30, I wake up and I see the spotlights on the trees in the backyard. We need to change that on the timer. He said, how would anybody else in the world know that but you? I'm awake. You know, I'm a workaholic. My mind is working. But, you know, I'm always journaling something. You know, Judy sent me a journal some time ago. It's by the side of my bed. And now I'm double journaling. I also have a little Olympus recorder so I can talk into my recorder when I wake up or I write something down. And I will come up with the darndest sentences, and I know they're not mine. They're affirmations that I've either read somewhere because I'm a voracious reader. I read Atlas Shrugged when I was 11. So, you know, I've read all of my life. And some of these things will pop up, and I'll write them down. And then a day or two later, I'll say, what in the heck was that? And I'll look it up, and it's something from Mark Twain, or it's something from the Dalai Lama, or it's somebody, you know, something from Wayne Dyer. And it's a little botched. They're not exact. But They're not my original ideas. They're somebody else's that I have read and that they stayed with me. And they're important because they're so empowering.
Yeah. Well, I've always kept something by my my bed. You know, I wake up, take notes. It's more like, for me, it's usually things that I need to do. Or it's ideas about something.
Yeah.
I got an idea. And so I do that all the time. And, you know, and if you want to hear something bizarre, not to sort of play, you know, can you top this, I sometimes find myself at the edge of consciousness where I'm sort of half dreaming and half awake, and I'm literally writing whole paragraphs in my head. You know, for something that I want to write.
I wrote an entire book one time, and I did not wake up sufficiently to write down the idea. I wrote an entire book.
Yeah.